to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jody Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hello, Eleni.
Hi, Jody. How are you?
I'm great. Today, we're talking about preventative care with our guest, Vicente Vasquez, global senior brand design manager, Colgate-Palmolive, and Dr. David Kim, dermatologist and founder of Lightsaver. And this made me think about this amazing work that you're doing with Vicente's peers at Colgate Optic White. Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. We have done so many amazing projects, and Vicente has been such a connector for us at the agency. I met Kayla Reisch, who is the senior brand design and innovation manager focused on global whitening. And Kayla, you know, as her title describes, is incredibly innovative. She's always thinking about what is the next thing that consumers are looking for from her brands. And she thought that this was the beauty space. So she came to us to help her do this deep dive, this audit, this research to see if there is data to support the fact that consumers are looking to oral care as beauty. And one of the most interesting stats we found is that 47% of consumers express interest in oral care products from beauty brands. So our mission was clear. How do we talk about Kayla's brands, Colgate Optic White, in the beauty lens to make it feel like more part of your beauty routine?
The work is so amazing, and it stretched our team across strategy, brand fundamentals, art direction, and copywriting. And I'm so proud that you were able to celebrate that the work won 3 Transform Awards.
Yes, such a fun night. It was really great to be connected with other Colgate partners and staffers. We really had a wonderful time seeing this work come to life on the big screen.
Well, let's talk about our guest today, Vicente Vasquez, the global senior brand design manager at Colgate-Palmolive, and Dr. David Kim, dermatologist and founder of the sunscreen brand Lightsaver. So special shout out to Vicente. He's worked on every single Colgate-Palmolive brand we've ever worked on, and we've worked across many in the portfolio, and he's always like a shining light in all the work. We love partnering with him. He's an amazing friend to Base Beauty.
Yeah, he really is. And this is a really great conversation. Both of our guests highlight the challenges of promoting preventative care, things like oral hygiene, sunscreen use, and the need for consistent habits.
Yeah, they actually both talked about interesting like consumer trends like around the world. People don't all have the same toothbrushing habits. It was really interesting, great episode to listen to. But education is important, right? So our COO, Sarah, says the brand that educates the consumer wins the consumer. And that's a lot of what this conversation is all about.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. There's also a fun moment where our two guests are talking about their favorite desserts, which you can listen in towards the end of the episode.
So this is a great summer episode. I hope that everyone's wearing their sunscreen. There is a heat wave coming, and I hope you learn a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. Let's hear more from Vicente Vasquez and Dr. David Kim. This is episode 287.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We are here talking preventative oral and skincare with Dr. David Kim, dermatologist and founder of Lightsaver. Hello, David.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It's really nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you too.
And Vicente Vasquez, global senior brand design manager, Colgate-Palmolive. Hi, Vicente.
Hello. Hi, nice to see you.
So we've never met before, David, so I'm really excited to meet you. Vicente, I've known for many, many years. We've worked together
for
8 years at this point?
No, not that long.
Oh,
no.
6 years.
No, maybe
5 years.
Yes, it was like 4 or 5.
4 years. Many years. You are always such a champion of Base Beauty, and everyone at this company adores you.
Yeah, well, they're wonderful. You guys are wonderful. Everything you guys do is wonderful.
Aww. Yeah. Well, I'm really glad we were able to snag you. Yeah. We've been trying to get friends from our Colgate team here for a long time. So thank you for making the time.
Of course, of course.
So it's a career journey show. We're going to go way back in time. David, you're 10 years old. What do you want to be when you grow up?
When I'm 10 years old? Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Gosh, I'm so old. I can't even think that far back. That's like 30 plus years ago. I think I actually really wanted to be a doctor. I didn't know what kind of doctor, but I knew I wanted to be in the sciences and I wanted to be in healthcare. So I think I've always had that dream.
Mm-hmm. And was there a doctor in your life that inspired that?
Yes, actually, I was never interested in dermatology. All I wanted to do was go into public health. So I don't know if you guys know this nonprofit organization called Partners in Health. It's actually an incredible story. These two Harvard Medical School students founded this nonprofit together when they were students back, I think, in early 2000s or 90s. And now it's one of the biggest nonprofit organizations. And one of the co-founders, his name is Dr. Jim Kim, who eventually went to become the president of the World Bank, and he was the first Asian American to become a president at Dartmouth or at Ivy League institutions. Mm-hmm. So I worked with him for a year as a research assistant right after college, and he was a huge inspiration for medicine and going into healthcare.
And Vicente, you're 10 years old. What's your dream?
When I was 10, it's probably hard to imagine, but I was a very theatrical kid, so I thought I wanted to be an actor. To the point of, I was actually always orchestrating the neighborhood kids. Mm. So they were 5, 6, 7, and 8 for me as well. I was giving them critiques.
Were they 5, 6, 7, 8 or are they 5, 6?
Exactly. And then, if you can imagine me, I was very Abby Lee Miller on the other side. Like, we got to rework it. Stop. pressing stop on the CD player or tape, whatever we had at that time.
Well, how old are you? Then we'll know if it was a tape or a CD.
No, we had both. I'm saying I was using both. So if you remember at the time, we would record the radio to have songs that we didn't have on the CD. So it might have been a tape. It might have been a CD.
We're talking mixtape years.
Yes, exactly.
David, are you of age to have done mixtapes?
Yes, 100%. I think we go way back here. Yeah.
I have never made a mixtape, but I have received mixtapes. Oh. I didn't have the patience for this, like waiting by the radio to press record. You know, this is almost like probably equivalent to like being a creator now. Like, you have to put in the time
100%
to make a mixtape.
So, not to go down this rabbit hole, we actually had the dual so that we recorded the radio and then you had to re-record doing the pausing to get rid of the commercials.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That's commitment.
Yeah, exactly.
What do kids do now with their time, right?
I don't know.
They're on their phones.
So you are not in the theater now.
No.
So let's start with you, Vicente. Yeah. How did you end up in the design world?
Yes, it's a good question. So theater, obviously having this kind of creative mind frame kind of took me to, you know, thinking that I wanted to go into theater, maybe into design, because I was always making stuff. I was a painter. I was, working on different things with my hands. So it really kind of came all together at like the senior year of high school, where I thought, okay, I need to make a decision on what I'm going to do. Do I want to be, and I hate to say this word, but do I want to be a starving actor, or do I want to do something that can actually make a little bit of money? An artist is not always making money. But then led me to graphic arts. So graphic design, you know, is a huge wide net. So I actually had no idea what I was going to get into. And I remember going through college and really tailoring my book to branding, advertising, packaging. There was a really distinct moment that I remember. We had a senior showcase when I was graduating, and people were flipping through my book and like, this whole book is packaging and beauty. Like, what are you going to do with this?
Mm.
And I was like,
well, that was like a negative.
Yeah. For them, it was a negative. Uh-huh. And I said, well, that's actually what I want to do. That's who I'm pursuing. That's mm-hmm. who I want to go after. So it was interesting to see, because everyone else around me was making, you know, cool posters mm-hmm. and club posters, and they were making cool t-shirts and hats. And I was like, those things are all great, but that's not actually where I'm trying to position myself. Mm-hmm. So in a sea of all these designers, it actually was a great plus for me, because people were not looking into that space. And that's always what I was most interested in. So, yeah. And then things started right off. Yeah.
And David, how'd you find your way to dermatology?
So I went to medical school thinking that I wanted to go into infectious disease. That's what I wanted to do. But then I met this amazing mentor who convinced me that dermatology is extremely dynamic. So it has medicine, infectious disease, you see adults, kids, you do surgery, you do procedures, and you also do pathology. And when I worked with her on multiple research projects and shadowed and spent time in dermatology clinic, I really saw how dynamic and exciting it was. So that really convinced me to explore that a little bit further and do more research projects, and just like really fell in love with it.
So we're talking today about preventative care, preventative oral care, mm-hmm. saving our skin from the sun. So there's a real feel-good aspect to this work, and you're actually educating quite a bit.
Yeah.
So let's just talk a little bit about what it takes to actually like convince the world that this matters, right? So there's a really funny scene in The Office. Or did you watch The Office ever?
No.
Oh, okay. So some people in the room remember Dwight saying to this woman who's a dental hygienist, mm-hmm. she's like, you should come make an appointment. He's like, that's funny, that's for kids. So like, he doesn't believe that oral hygiene is important. That's yep. very much that Dwight character. So you're in the world of being like literally the leading brand yep. in oral yep. care. What's on your mind for what's next in this space?
Well, I think, and this is probably the same for your field as well, I think people don't think about these problems until there's a problem. Mm. So the whole idea of like preventative is like very important. And actually, you don't have to have all these problems if you're just having a routine, going through, you know, whatever it may be. So I think that's top of mind for us, is like, how do we educate people to really dive into before there's a problem? Like, many sensitive teeth users could be using that sensitive toothpaste prior to issues or prior to gum issues or whatever it may be. Same with gum health or, you know, bad breath or whatever they're targeting themselves after. So that's top of mind for us, and it's actually really hard. You would think this habit is something that people would do every day. Many people don't. So for us, not only are we educating adults to, you know, use twice a day, we also have a huge kids program that we go after. It's called our BSBF, Bright Smiles, Bright Futures. And that program, too, is just trying to get the habit instilled. And that also is very dependent on the parent. So we have to actually go after two audiences all at once of, is the parent brushing or are they having the child brush? Otherwise, no brushing's happening, you know, so.
You mean there are a lot of Americans who don't brush their teeth
twice
a day?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Really?
Oh, 100%.
Like, what percentage of?
I don't have a stat off the top of my head, but you would be very surprised.
Wow.
You would be very surprised, you know. And on top of that, there's a huge amount of adults especially that are not actually visiting the dentist. Mm-hmm. So they rely on these, you know, consumer products and these over-the-counters to really help them, you know, aid in whatever they're trying to prevent or whatever they're trying to take care of. So yeah, I mean, that's what's top of mind for us.
Going to the dentist is a really like nervy topic for a lot of people.
It really is.
Oh, pun intended.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah.
No, it really is. And a lot of it comes from just being comfortable. Mm-hmm. So if people realize, and I'll bring this up again to our program with Bright Smiles, Bright Futures, we have children join us and they just sit in a chair. We actually don't do any procedure, but just to show them, this is an easy process. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to talk to you. Someone might put some tools in your mouth and they're going to have this discussion with you. In those programs, we actually allow adults to join as well, because sometimes the parent is also very scared. Mm-hmm. So it just becomes this comfortable situation of, it's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. You know,
like, it's a cool chair.
Yeah.
Cool room.
Yeah. There's going to be a bright light on you, like lights, camera, action, 5, 6, 7, 8. You're fine. Yeah.
So David, we do a lot of work in the sunscreen space. So I know for a fact that getting the patient to comply with wearing sunscreen daily is a Herculean task. Tell me what it's been like for you as a derm.
I think what's interesting is that a lot of people understand the importance of sunscreen and they know that they should wear it. It's just that they really don't want to because the experience is just so unpleasant. Mm-hmm. The way it smells, the way it feels, leaving a white cast. So there is a huge interest and demand, but the products are not there to serve that purpose. And I think a lot of innovation has happened in the past few years and it's gotten so much better. Formulas are better and people now find sunscreen to be cool and something that you should be wearing every single day. And that really narrative really helps too. I think it's just understanding that sunscreen prevents your skin from developing skin cancer, but also that it's the best anti-aging skincare product. I think once you hear that, you'll be more convinced to use that, you know? And also, it doesn't matter how much money you spend on Botox and fillers and lasers, and that's all I do every single day. And if you're not protecting your skin, if you're not wearing sunscreen, and if you're not putting in the 30 seconds in the day to protect your skin, all the thousands of dollars that you spent on cosmetic treatments will all go down the drain. And the results won't last as long, and you won't benefit from it as much. So when you understand that, and then there's a longevity to it, and it will help you long term, maybe not immediately, you may not see the difference, then people start to really understand the benefit of it.
What I'd like to say is sunscreen is the least expensive, most effective anti-aging treatment.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and for a good one can be really inexpensive. Yeah. You can certainly spend more. You know, this idea of the patient or the customer complying is shared in your world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where can you have fun with it as the expert in this space to inspire? Like, you know, TikTok is all about fun. People respond to fun, quick things. Like, what can you do in this world to kind of take us to a new place of compliance? I'll start with you, David.
That's an interesting question. I think that's a really challenging question. Like, how do you change the narrative around something that is considered necessary, but almost like positioning it as something that is optional and more fun, something that you actually want to use, not something you have to use. I think once people understand
that sunscreens that have come out in the past few years have advanced so much that it doesn't feel like sunscreen, the traditional sunscreen that we think of and that we associate with. And I think once you start to get over that barrier and actually use it and you share it with your peers, I think that's when the narrative starts to change. Like, you see your friend wearing it, you see your brother or your sister wearing it, and the younger sibling wants to emulate them. And I think that's how things start to change a little bit. And I think it really does start from like schools and households and the role models that they see. I don't think it has to be celebrities or influencers. Mm-hmm. I think it really starts from home. And I think there are so many aspects of sunscreen that are really fun. There are ones that are glowy, mm-hmm. ones that give you a matte finish. Like, and yet there's so many options now that you can pick and choose. And I think once you find that hero product that you like, you stick with it and you just, use it every single day. And I think that could be really a big game changer. And also, there are a lot of sunscreens with skincare benefits now, right. And I think that is another way to help educate people that it's not just to protect your skin from UV damage, but also to brighten, hydrate, and calm your skin. And I think that's also really fun.
Vicente, are you wearing sunscreen right now?
I'm not. But I am moisturized.
I brushed my teeth this morning.
Okay, great.
So Vicente, I'm a little surprised at you because we have worked on sunscreen products together.
I know. But I will tell you, actually, some of the pain points that you just brought up are exactly why I don't love to use it daily.
Yes.
It's because I don't like the smell. I don't like the feel.
Yeah.
So I use it more when I am going outdoors or when I have an activity. You know what I mean?
Okay, now tell him all the reasons why that's not right.
Yeah. I mean, I will send you samples.
Great.
So that you all...
You're going to get some.
So it's unscented. Okay.
We have new products coming out, so we'll send you more. But I think it's all about consistency, right? Like, same thing with anything in life. It's all about consistency because you will just like you were saying earlier, so eloquently, it's all about prevention and just getting ahead of it. Because like, it's so much easier to just try to prevent than to try to fix a problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All it takes is like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I want to dig into your career a little bit more because you've been at a lot of interesting, cool brands, right?
Yeah.
And you told Natasha this story of like when a interview went sideways, which I just think the whole room has to hear about.
Well, I'll jump to the end of the story first because it didn't go sideways. It actually went actually went super well. But if you can imagine, Little Vicente. Just landed in New York, and I was interviewing to work for the first beauty company I worked for, which was Coty, to work on Calvin Klein. And the creative director at the time was a little bit late to my interview, and he's going to hate that I'm telling this, or he actually may love this. A little late to my interview, and I'm sitting there, and then all of a sudden, his assistant's like, hey, your 10 a.m. is here, or whatever time it was. And he was like, oh, great. And then he holds up, he says, do you mind if I eat? And I was like, oh, no. He's like, okay, then come on in. So I join in. I'm walking through my book, right? I'm flipping through. Again.
Wait, let's just explain for people who don't understand the analog world what looking through my book means.
Yeah, so sorry. So like at the time, you had to actually print your portfolio. You actually had a printed piece. And actually, that was a big portion of the judgment of like your creativity and, your perception. Now we don't do any of that. It's all on iPads or iPhones or whatever you want to do. You just scroll right through it. Or actually even just scrolling through your website is actually a big trend now. So I have my book, a physical book. We're flipping through it, and I'm explaining. I'm pouring my heart out, right? I want this job so bad. And the whole time, he's just like, And so I'm like, okay. He's like eating. He's like loving like every single bite. And I get done with my book, and I'm just like. And he goes, that's exactly what we do here. And I was like, okay. And he's like, thanks for coming. So I left there thinking, I don't know what just happened, but like, I gave it my all, and luckily,
little Vicente,
yeah. And anyway, I got a call, and I got, the job. So anyway, all worked out.
That's amazing. And
egg and cheese.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Was it bacon, egg, and cheese? Or just
it was like, why can't I think of the muffin?
English muffin.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes.
So it is really kind of a weird and often gross experience to be that close to somebody when they're eating and it's 100%. Not a meal, right? Is he like dripping grease on your book?
No, but like I said, I mean, I mimicked him. I mean, literally arm under here and just like devouring and eating. It was like, right. It was the funniest experience. And like I said, I'm just trying to present. I'm trying to show all the great things and all the thought process behind the, you know, the work that I'm showing. So no, it was funny. It was a great story. And actually to this day, and he isn't going to hate this, because when we have dinner, he makes me tell the story to whoever we're at dinner with. So, yeah.
You know that this experience of interviewing is a really strange thing, especially when you're so young in your career.
Yes.
There's no like real, I guess, guidebook to it. I'm sure there's plenty of actual self-help books in the category, but like everyone on the other side of the interview has something in their head that they're not expressing. There's no way for you to actually like read their mind.
100%.
And you're just sort of like a passenger on a ride, especially very early in your career.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
I've been fired from so many things that I must have been interviewing like my whole 20s because I always needed another job or laid off, but fired too. And, you know, I'm hoping that the way that we interview here is different than the things that I experienced in my 20s, because we actually want to get to know people and ask questions and see how they think. But back then when it was just about like, okay, you haven't done this, goodbye.
Right.
It was a pretty cold process.
Yeah, it was actually. And if you can imagine that interview, I had been through many others. I was carrying that book around. I'm sure it had tattered pages, because it was like that, just like door to door to door, like trying to get in somewhere, you know?
So, David, let's take this conversation in your realm.
Yes.
I would imagine you've had some, like, interesting situations with patients that were, like, you know, you've never seen before in terms of the way that they participate or choose not to participate, right? You're in the people business.
Yeah.
But they're there for a service and maybe are not always really ready to receive your messages. So, like, how do you handle patients that are just sort of tough?
Just kind of in clinic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, I have the loveliest patients. I really do. And I'm so lucky.
Yay.
And I think a lot of people are so well versed in the world of skincare and cosmetic treatments because there's immense interest. So people come prepared. They have photos of their skincare. Mm-hmm. They have like specific questions about treatments that they're interested in learning more about. What I do have to do a lot of times is tell patients no, though.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of younger patients who come and will show a photo of a celebrity and say, I want to look like this. And that's a tough conversation, because you should never try to look like someone else. Just because it looks beautiful on a model or a celebrity doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to look beautiful on you. And you should try to find a way to accentuate and highlight your best assets and figure out a way to bring light to that instead of trying to be like someone else. So the patients that are really tough are the ones who are very trend-centric and want to follow the trend and whatever's trending on TikTok and Instagram and jump on that look. And that's when you have to pause and say, this is cool and it works for that person, but it's not going to work for you for XYZ reason. And just like take the time to help them understand and kind of shift the conversation a little bit and help them understand why they should focus on other things that they might not have thought about. Like, for example, hyperpigmentation, even skin tone, that's a huge topic that a lot of people oversee.
Mm-hmm.
If you had like clear skin, even skin tone, and you had porcelain skin, if you had a little bit of wrinkles and skin laxity, you're not going to care, because you're going to be glowing from inside out, really. And so it's not so much about plumping your lips and having snatched jawline and huge cheekbones. It's not about that. It's really about subtle tweakments that no one will know that you had any work done. And that is the ultimate goal. And not, you know, feeling the pressure to follow trends and look a certain way. I feel like it's so hard being women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's so much pressure, and I see it, I hear it every day. And I really like try to shift the conversation around what it means to be beautiful. Because I think everyone has a different definition. And I think it's like not a simple conversation, you know, but it's a fun conversation just to see how they perceive themselves. And it's very telling about like how culturally the world is shifting.
And is that a story you tell your fans on your socials?
I do. There was a video that I did that I said, don't try to look like someone else because it may not work for you. And people really appreciate that. And then patients also really appreciate when I say no. Like, patients will come back 3 months later and say, I want a little more lip filler. I just need to drop more. And I'll say,
probably not a good idea. Like, it's also not worth your money. Mm-hmm. Like, to just wait, like, let it settle. It still looks beautiful. Get another 3 months out of it, you know? And they really appreciate that because I'm
so
not.
So they believe you.
Yeah, 100%. Because mm-hmm. there has to be, it's elective procedures, mm-hmm. and we have to be on the same page about what we think is beautiful. And so I may tell someone that I don't think I'm the right provider for you because to me, this is not beautiful. Mm-hmm. To me, this looks artificial and mm-hmm. it's way too exaggerated and it's not my aesthetic. And I think you'll be happier going somewhere else. And I think people appreciate that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So that's a topic of tough feedback. So Vicente, yeah. if we can go into your world, your work is literally getting criticized left and right by
yes.
everybody in the organization, right? It's kind of this role where you put your heart and soul into design and innovation, and then 400,000 people around the world are deciding, oh, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So how do you handle that type of feedback?
That's a great question. I think in totality, as a creative, we live in the gray. Mm-hmm. So we don't live in black and white, and we don't have a definite, right? So I think that as a whole...
You mean because it's not objective? It's
yeah, gray. I mean, we make it, and part of my role now is to make design have, you know, strong objectives, mm-hmm. have business objectives, and that's really where design strategy plays a huge part is... It's the intersection of a business objective, a consumer need or problem, and then also design principles. Mm-hmm. Like, it's how they all marry together. So it's really framing that for people to take out the subjectivity of it. Because what often happens, and this is just what we do as humans, we walk into a room, we see something, and we're like, I hate that because my aunt wore purple and I have a bad memory of my aunt. It's like, that doesn't mean anything. That's not a real piece of feedback. And what I just expressed is yes, you probably have seen this, yeah. And people don't often express that, but that's what's in their mind. That's when it's in their psyche of they have some kind of, you know, memory that's attached to that in some way. And it also is very hard because we all have eyes, we all interact with this world, mm-hmm. and everyone's aesthetics are not the same. So you may have grown up in an environment that had this type of aesthetic versus someone else grew up in a minimalistic aesthetic mm-hmm. versus someone else had their nose in vogue, you know, like myself, you know what I mean? Like, you just have like different people seeing different things. So I think the business of design is interesting because we need to take not only our stakeholders on a journey, but also the consumer, because mm-hmm. we need them to also buy into it. And that's where it becomes holistic and making people really love something and really use something. And the power of branding is like actually so interesting because it can be a really terrible product mm-hmm. and you buy it because you're buying into the brand. Mm-hmm. You're buying into the situation. You're buying into whatever this company is selling. And that happens often, you know? So to answer your question, it's very hard. And I think bringing subjectivity around it, making sure that we take a very gray problem and make it almost black and white, it never can be, but it is hard. And one last thought about this is it is really hard to pinpoint maybe what's wrong mm-hmm. with what we've done from a design perspective because of all those different attributes. And it's much easier in where, you know, my past life and beauty life, because it's very focused. In consumer life, where I am now, consumer goods hit many different people. Mm-hmm. They hit a grandma all the way down to, you know, a five-year-old. So I have to open up that lens and really appeal to all of these people.
All over the world.
Yeah, exactly, which is very difficult. Mm-hmm. But we make it happen, and we sell a lot of great products.
Well, you know, you mentioned something that takes me back in time in my business. So I've had Base Beauty for 18 years, and really early on I realized I won't have a business if I can't prove that this works. So like, you know, back then, you know, I can date myself. This world was just about making pretty things,
yes,
like compelling
yes.
looking things. But if we just made pretty things, we'd be closed in 2 years.
100%.
Right. So we needed to find a way to develop evidence
yep.
And proof points to show that, you know, when we present to you, you have enough evidence then to present to leadership.
100%.
Right. And this, obviously these muscles, we keep flexing the more access we have to data
yep.
sources, but people need to be convinced that this is the right thing so that you can overcome this purple, you know, situation. My aunt wore purple
yes.
and I don't like purple.
Yes.
Right?
Well, and you're right, too, that now the tools and in today's function and world, which are growing rapidly, we can back it up with those data points, where previously it was, here it is, we push it out, and we hope that it sells, or we hope that it moves. But now we can do all this pre-research, we can do all of these, you know, guiding points, you're right, to like drive the business before the consumer ever sees it.
My last point on this is, I think when I was growing up in the industry, it was like, how much of a show can you put on? How like big can you wave your arms? And how like much you can name drop? Yes. to make you want to buy the idea?
Yeah.
Right, which was just all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, but even internally, right? So like the whole Mad Men era is over.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like there's no ta-das, mm-hmm. especially what I do or what I, you know, as you guys as agency partners, that's what it used to be. Mm-hmm. It used to be, and here's the idea. It's like, no, that's over. So yeah. You're totally right.
Okay, so before we move into our game phase of the show, let's talk about books. We've been having a lot of fun conversations today around books on leadership or wellness that inspire you. So, David, I'll start with you. What's on your nightstand? What are you reading?
Oh, my gosh. Right now, I recently finished a book. It's like Something Girl. Let me look it up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Vicente, the heat's on you now.
So I'm really into weird books, and I mean this by like learning, and that's not always everyone's.
Weird learning?
No, just like I love learning about topics, mm-hmm. you know, the psychology of people, things like this. So the most recent book I just read is called The Four Tendencies. It's by Gretchen Rubin, I think is her name. And it's all about us as humans and how we like to receive information.
Oh, I think Gretchen Rubin wrote The Happiness Project,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And so The Four Tendencies is so interesting because, you know, we get these broad aspects of our personalities, but this is like honing in just on like how you give information, how you receive information. You actually should have your whole team do it because okay. once you like see how people... you know, use the information.
I just smiled at Sarah, so she gets it.
Yes,
that.
Please. Yeah. And it's quick. It's not 30 seconds, like 2 minute survey. It is such a cool practice and it will actually change just how you interact with mm-hmm. the team and the feedback that you give them. And yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Okay. Dave, heat's on.
It's The Guest by Emma Klein. It's really good. Nothing about leadership. It's all about lying.
Lying?
Yeah.
Like telling falsehoods?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a fiction, but I think it's going to get turned into a movie. I think Reese Witherspoon might have bought the rights to turn into a movie, but it's a really good book. And it's a story about a young girl in New York City who basically lies through her life to get what she wants. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting story.
Very timely. We have a lot of people lying in the world to get what they want. Okay, moving on. Okay, moving on. So you both mentioned, interestingly, to the room, baking is a hobby, right? You have this in common. So we're going to go on a dessert tour around the city. Okay.
Oh, awesome.
So it's going to be a this or that. We're going to be two trendy options.
Cool.
Yeah, this is good. Take notes in the room. And you're going to tell us what your sweet tooth is craving. Okay. So the first scenario is Sal and Jerry's Bakery, where you can get rainbow cookies, or Chip City Cookies, where you can get a strawberry shortcake croissant cookie. David, where are you heading?
The second, the
strawberry shortcake croissant cookie.
Yeah.
Why?
Like, it sounds healthier.
Oh.
Yeah, because of the strawberries. So I'll feel less guilty.
Okay, Vicente, where are you going?
Chip. I'm a huge Chip fan, and not a big rainbow cookie fan.
Oh, I love a rainbow cookie.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. And it's also funny because it's like so, it's so labor intensive, and so I feel so bad because I'm like, wow, I really don't like this.
Because it's like the three different levels.
Three different levels, yeah. It's like a whole process.
I love the almond extract in a rainbow cookie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next journey. Sunday morning, New York City, where you'd get a cinnamon roll topped with blueberry lemon curd and the cream cheese frosting, or The Hive, which is owned by a former Base Beauty publicist, Butterfinger-topped cinnamon roll. Okay, so you're either going to The Hive for a Butterfinger-topped cinnamon roll, with shout-out to Catherine, or Sunday Morning NYC cinnamon roll top with blueberry lemon curd and cream cheese frosting. Vicente, what are you eating?
I'm going for the blueberry lemon curd.
Okay, that's a lot.
I love that. Oh, that's fine. Great combo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Butterfinger, the candy, and breakfast don't work for me.
Okay, David?
I have to agree.
Yeah. Okay.
It sounds delicious.
Yeah.
The Hive, just to shout out to our former colleague, has a line outside the door every weekend for their cinnamon buns. They're in Hoboken and Jersey City.
Okay.
They're literally famous in those neighborhoods. And it's beautiful to see like a friend build something that people really want.
That's amazing.
Okay, next locations, Dough Donuts, where you can have a brioche donut filled with pistachio cream topped with chocolate. Or Peter Pan Donut, a donut filled with cannoli cream topped with Nutella and cannoli crunch. We'll start with you, David.
It's the Peter Pan? You said?
Peter Pan Donut is a donut filled with cannoli cream topped with Nutella and cannoli crunch.
100%, no?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No question. No question about that.
Yes. I agree. I agree.
So, this is hard. I love both of these places.
Oh, you've been to both of these places?
100%.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah. It's so terrible to say.
Of course, of course.
And if you ever go to Peter Pan, the ingredients are so real. The box is heavy, so like if you get 12 donuts, it's like you're like carrying like a, yeah, exactly. I would probably go with the Peter Pan donut.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I really like my sweets. I just want to interject here, and I would rather like eat my calories and drink my calories, right? Mm. So like. Desserts are very important to me,
yes.
But I am literally getting a headache just thinking about all these ingredients together.
Yeah.
It's a lot, but we'll move on. Okay. Yeah. Lafayette Bakery, where you can have an espresso martini filled wheel croissant, or Mario's Irish soda bread shop, where you can have a scone covered in full cream Irish butter. David, what are you eating here?
Oh my gosh. I would go with the latter. That sounds like it would go well with coffee, you know?
Irish soda bread scone covered in full cream Irish butter.
Yes.
I'm right there with it.
Okay. Yeah. I really do like butter.
Yeah, me too.
She doesn't agree.
I can eat butter just off of a fork. I don't even need the bread.
Yeah.
Like a really good butter makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Okay, last sugar journey. This was picked specifically for Vicente's career history, Baked by Melissa.
Yes.
Where you had worked.
I did.
Right?
Yeah.
Are you choosing the All Flavors 50-pack of cupcakes or the black and white macaroons? We'll start with you, Vicente.
From Baked by Melissa?
Yeah, you have to just pick a treat.
Oh, the cupcakes for sure.
The cupcakes? What about you, David?
The cupcakes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for playing.
Of course.
We definitely got our sugar fix.
Yeah. I'm hungry now.
I know, me too.
Thank you all so much for participating, too. This is such a great conversation. I really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
For listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.